have here? We're missing Hector.
He's out today.
Okay. You want us, folks? You ready? Because I know we're late as it is. So I'm going to call the meeting to order. Okay. Before I start, I see we have guest presentations. The Resource Recovery Agency report. Tim?
There.
Come on up.
Probably the most pressing thing we have going on right now are the meetings we've been having with the towns in regards to the roll-off service. As you may or may not be aware, there was a resolution that was put forward that last month's meetings had just continued also.
We discussed this.
And the board tabled it until this month. And in the meantime, they wanted to have a workshop, which they had yesterday. So it was the board of directors and without
any supervisors.
Yes.
Situated supervisors came, okay. And a few members of the public. And it was a good exchange. It was a back and forth, it just wasn't one sided. So it lasted probably a couple hours or so. And as a result, two board members, Mr. David Gordon and Charles Landy, agreed to meet with Carl Chippen, president of the Supervisors Association, and someone else, deputy attorney, to try to hash out some kind of agreement with the town. So they're kind of under the gun because I have to create the agency budget starting May and June. And July the board reviews it and formally approves it in August of that year. And as soon as it's approved in August, it's not here. The legislature to the county is there. So, our contract with the county says we'll have the budget in July for I don't know how many years. It's always been sent to this office in August every year. You know, we just keep them in the same thing. So given that, if we're going to develop the budget in May or June, I need to know if the towns are in or out.
Right.
Essentially, so. This is not my decision, it's the board's decision if they want to do so.
Well, the people that you met with today, did you give them a time frame to get back to you?
Yeah.
No, they wanted to tweak the agreement so that it's a little more agreeable to the town. And so Dave Gordon and I agreed to take on the task of going through the agreement and seeing where we can make it more amenable to them. Okay, and we're going to try to do that, and Carl Chipman is on board with that, and the town supervisors that were there were on board with that. What we all agreed with was that we can't, without having an agreement with the towns, we can't develop a budget, and we can't develop a capital plan.
Right.
So that's the logjam, as far as we're concerned. And so hopefully we can come to some agreement on the agreement and go from there.
Okay. Good. Good.
I know that that's not a job, and I don't appreciate everything that's doing. I just say I hope an agreement would not include to help the towns not include raising the fees on the private sector. I'd like to see them at least on a level that they have this year. So,
that's good. I am happy to say that the private sector not raised in 2 years, and it looks like going into next year we won't have to raise them again. We're doing pretty good with our cost-cutting measures and so forth. So,
my only concern is if you left everything open at the end of these discussions, you have no idea when these people are going to get back to you.
Well, no.
And one idea that was floated out there was having a time frame to come up with an agreement. You have 30 or 60 days or something.
Right.
And that's it. And if you want to sign it, fine. If you don't, we'll just pull you put that out at the end of the year and we'll part our ways.
Okay.
Which will help me out because if it's half the time the town sign on it, the other half don't, I would just have to reduce our capital costs. You want to buy as much equipment, but does give me some sort of long-term plan that I can do for 5 because I have to have a 5-year capital plan to present to the board. I can't present that 5-year plan because I'm totally run down there. This is escalated to the state.
But if the farm transfer station say, and the close transfer station is out, that transfer station goes up too.
They're going to have to make the difference.
The town. So it might not be able to come up with a plan. Your plan may be amenable if every town agrees to it. It may not be amenable if Ulster and the close towns, Hurley and Ulster and whoever, the Scopus, decide to not do it, then it could blow that out of the water.
Absolutely. And I mentioned that in the meeting yesterday.
Do you have the capability to operate the roll-up service out of the New Paltz, out of the New Paltz scales, or is it only Attitude?
No, we do both.
You do both?
Okay.
So, because that was what I was thinking, a lot of the southern towns signed on, and the ones that were not in the southern area did not sign on, and that might make it, you know, prohibitive at Attitude.
Yeah, no, we can continue New Paltz as an initial.
Okay.
Unless... And probably none of you are aware of this, but our contract with the town of New Paltz for our transfer station, we own the Ulster site. We don't own the New Paltz site. New Paltz site, we actually leased the town of New Paltz. That agreement is up in September of 16th. I'm assuming they want to sign back on, and I'll get to that.
Okay, Tracy?
This resolution, it was circulated at the last meeting, which was after our last meeting, correct? We didn't just, at our last meeting of this committee, we didn't discuss that resolution, but that resolution came out post.
I think it's been kicked around since December.
But in terms of a concrete, here it is in paper, we're terminating service as a...
Yeah, we have to talk about that.
That was the fourth Wednesday. That's when it was. So no, you're right. It would have been... That resolution was after last Wednesday.
And to Peter's point, so David Gordon and Charlie are going to work on changing the contract in a way that the supervisors will feel more comfortable with and maybe more likely to sign. But did the board talk about what the timeline is for them to have to sign?
No.
Immediately
we will be talking to them. Dave and I are going to meet this weekend. As a matter of fact, tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock, we have a tour scheduled, and three board members are taking this tour of some of the Renegade transfer stations. And we're going to meet, hopefully, with the supervisors there. So basically, that's where we are.
I feel like this is a very, very tricky balance right now, just because of the timing of getting something that people are going to be confident with and getting people to be ready to sign. Because if I put myself even in a supervisor's shoes, they've been kicking this around forever and always looking for the brighter side, but they're going to see whatever you're proposing and they're going to then want to go and find out what else is out there, but meanwhile you need to know before July.
You have the sense that they have been getting prices, and the sense is that they're not sure they want to cross that line because it's more expensive.
They want to look at the contract. It's not a formal contract written for this agreement, but what Charlie's referring to is the old 20-year agreement. Mm-hmm. They have to use that 20-year agreement to move forward.
Can I just ask a follow-up? What kind of timeline, when you talk about creating a new contract, are you looking at a 10-year contract, a 5-year contract, another 20-year contract?
They're reluctant to do a 10, and they've backed away, some of them have backed away from a 5, and according to, you know, our numbers don't work less than 5. It's going to be very expensive for them as far as the capital line is concerned, if we go to a 3.
No, I mean
that's going to make perfect sense. That's 10-year. When I look at the numbers, you go to 5-year, I think 10 years, I think it's best for the agency. I personally think it's best for the town because it spreads the cost over the 10-year gap. which reduces the pole, which reduces the amount of oxygen already. So we proposed a 10-year last year, but I haven't seen the pole part.
What is the life of one of those boxes?
They're not beat up. What's the standard? Assuming the towns are using heavy equipment automating work, should be able to get 15 years out of the box. But that's an assumption. And we have a welder working constantly making the repairs that he can make in the shop. And just so you know, I had a, I may have mentioned that last year. But a month or so ago, I had a representative from one of the roll-off companies come and talk to me about boxes. And he said, are you ready to buy now? And I said, I don't know what the towns are going to do. I explained to the town situation. And one thing I did say, though, is that we have problems with some of the towns. We're using backhoes and excavators to pack down these boxes. And he laughed, and he said, I can sell you the most heavy-duty box that we manufacture, and if they're using backhoes and excavators on, they're going to bolt both sides out, and they're going to break the inches off the box. That's the best one I can think of. So you can't. So not, you know, he told me he was going to have to ride for that. I know they're not going to ride for that. They're not just to throw garbage in my life. They're not meant for this, you know. I ain't going to do it, so.
Any other questions?
Yeah? I just want to say that, first of all, I feel really encouraged. And it was my understanding that two of the agency board members would meet with Carl Chipman and one of the other town supervisors. And
we're going to do that.
And collaboratively develop something that the supervisors are more likely to sign so that you can report.
Madam, we want to get over this tour tomorrow first, and then we're going to, hopefully over the weekend, I'll touch base with Carl, and we'll see what we can set up to have a meeting with them.
And one thing that one of the board members suggested was that if a town signs an agreement, that it includes a penalty if they opt out if the agency has purchased boxes. I don't know where that will go, but it was an interesting suggestion. But the problem, I think, so I think the communication is improving, and I think it's the first time in over a year of observing this that I really feel optimistic that there's going to be a resolution.
If you're optimistic, that's encouraging, man.
but the other point I wanted to make is that it's probably been 15 years since there was a regular replacement schedule for roll-off boxes. So we're in an unusual situation where the agency's really backed up, in terms of in order to provide safe service moving forward, there probably has to be a larger purchase. I think the suggestion was about a third of the fleet might need to be replaced in the next 5 years.
We'll be scrapping some of them in short order. We're talking to people now to do that.
It's 60%
of the fleet needs to be replaced within the next 5 years. And just so you know, too, in the spring of 2012, the 20-year agreement expired in most of 90% of it, in September of 2012. In the spring of 2012, seeing that contract coming out, I visited with every supervisor that had a transition in their office, every one of them, and asked for 5 years so I could buy boxes, because I very well can't buy boxes for people that get up the ground. And I was flat out told by someone that when I stayed with you, told them in their office, I want them to get here in a public meeting, so they had more nothing to do with you. So I couldn't plan to replace boxes. I wanted to do that, but I very well couldn't do it if people weren't going to stick around. It wouldn't make good business sense. And as an authority, I have to be able to run business as a business. So I tried to make that effort. I just don't want you to know that. I reached out. There was one supervisor who really came up to bat and said, I'll be there to support you. Because the agency supported me.
Okay. Rich, I'm sorry, you done here?
I think the supervisor, that's one of many reasons, but it leaves us in a situation where the fleet needs to be replaced more sooner than later. It can't be as gradual as would be easy. And I think that may come back to us. So and then the last thing is that I think that a five-year agreement, if it can be reached, is going to be more palatable to the towns because you know what your basic expenses, you know what your revenue is going to be from the sale of recyclables, so you know what your basic expenses are. Price of fossil fuel could vary a little bit, but you basically have a pretty good handle on your expenses for the next 5 years. What they don't know is what the plan for the next 10 or 20 years. So I think that's one of the reasons they're reluctant to sign a longer agreement. But if we could do a five-year agreement with sort of some understanding about how the boxes are going to get paid for, I think
that's what we're shooting for.
Yeah. That's all I have.
Okay, I'm just going to say my last comments is, I mean, I think it's a good meeting, but at the end of the day, it all comes down to money. And I'm sure the numbers aren't going to change from your meetings the last 2 years to your meeting that you're going to have with them. The money's what it costs. It is what it is. And they haven't signed on. And I still think there's going to be problems with some going to the front, like Ulster maybe, or the close ones, maybe signing off, you know, leaving the agency. But I think, and I've said it for a year now, the county should make a commitment to help the towns. And maybe, you know, we should refund $400,000 or $500,000 to help purchase the boxes. I mean, I don't know, let's say Ron's against it, because, and I understand your point. We took over election costs and Medicaid costs and expense budget, helped them out. I totally get that. But at the end of the day, if we really care about the environment and we need to do what we can to help these towns out, because the alternative is going to be higher prices, there'll be more trash on the roads, there'll be less, you know, it's just not good. So I think the county, I mean, we kind of did the flow control and took $3 million off our books. And the reason why everything wasn't being updated for years, man, Joe, is because they had come back to us for money, and, you know, their rule was, you know, the manager was always low net service fee as low as we can get. So they didn't get to do it, not of any fault of their own, because we were all pinching pennies, and they did. But now, I just don't see going back. The number's going to be the same. They're not going to be much different without any contribution from the county, so I think there needs to be a plan B in place as
well.
It fails because we all get phone calls.
Thanks. So I just want to say again, you know, I've passed this along to the board and Tim a bunch of times. I don't support the county spending any more money in the towns right now. I mean, we've taken quite a bit of money off of their books. There should be some money there in their budgets in order to, you know, plan for something like this. Another point that I'd like to make is the point that's made by my town supervisor every time we talk about it. These transfer stations aren't supposed to be a revenue generator for the towns. The town of Shawangunk runs theirs flat. They don't make any money on it. They don't lose any money on it. They don't pump taxpayer money into it. The money that's spent on the transfer station is generated by the sale permits and the disposal of the trash bags, you know, the cost of those. The cost goes up from the agency. The cost goes up at the transfer station. The cost is borne by the users. We're open. If we got a town with 14,000 people in it, they're open 2 days a week. They're open Wednesdays and Saturdays. And they just raised the permit $5. They just raised the bag $1. And nobody's raising heck. Nobody's, you know, throwing garbage up in the middle of their car.
But what happens is some people will then resort to the private sector, which doesn't for less money, which puts more of a burden on the transfer stations. And
the private sector doesn't do it for less money.
No.
That's not what we're hearing.
The transfer station? What I get rid of my garbage for is a lot cheaper than if I had to go buy a permit for $25 or $50 for the year, or $30, whatever they charge, and then go there once a week and
how would you feel about the agency raising its tipping fee?
I got to drive there, 5 miles back, that's 10 miles, that's a gallon of gas, that's $3.
And it's probably $3 a bag, that's $6.
Plus my permit.
Well, you amortize the permit.
I'm paying $21 for my roadside pickup. I'm not $4 a week. $5 a week.
What did your permit cost?
I think it's 25. Permit now. Sean, I'm 25. Yeah. Give or take. I don't have one. So I don't know. But, well, listen, if you listen, if you wouldn't have these arguments, government, so it's obviously not working. It's not working. It worked for 20 years without problems because the county made the contribution from the town.
What would be your reaction to the agency raising its tipping fee from $103 to $108?
For who?
For everybody. Across the board.
Why?
I mean, just in case we have to.
And so then that's what flow control allows you to do. I think I don't like it.
I'm not suggesting we're going in that direction, but that is a possibility.
Yeah, listen, if that's...
Let's see how the negotiations go. Okay. All right. Is there, we all done anything else? I'll move on.
Thank you, Charlie.
Thank you. Okay. One thing I overlooked it when I started the meeting. Could I get a motion to accept the meetings of March 4th and March 26th?
I'm over.
Second?
Okay.
Okay, moved by Richie, seconded by, what's that? You weren't at the first meeting.
No, you can still hold on. Every monthly meeting is a legislative meeting. We accept the minutes from the month before. The majority leader and the minority leader have a short yes. There's never been a no. So if somebody was at a legislative meeting, missed a month, and then we're there the next month, since you've been here, you've approved the minutes, and so has any legislator.
Right.
So nobody ever says, I wasn't here last month at the meeting.
Look, we're going to sit here and argue over the meeting.
We don't need to do that.
And the
minutes for the legislature are just minutes of action.
So we don't watch them.
Right. No, they're not. It's a lot of detail.
Okay.
So legislative meetings are minutes of every resolution going on, too, just like here. And just got our discussion.
Okay. Listen up.
I'd like to move Resolution 109 for discussion.
That's fine. Can I get a second? I'll second it. Okay, let's look at it. A what?
Not sure if that's, I didn't hand anything out yet until I get my realization.
I thought the way we do this is just go through the rest of the way.
We need to micromanage the details of like, oh, that should be A, that should be 1, like we can clean it.
We can clean it up, yeah.
Like some kind of.
Right,
yep.
You want to go right to section 1?
Let's go to where we left off. Let's go to section 1, might as well. Go ahead, you want to start?
Sure. The first comment on the track changes version on the side here, we just needed the energy costs.
Department of Energy. Is it?
We did, but can I also, on that, can that paragraph move to become, to go two paragraphs down? Because I think the leading was Ulster County recognized the energy associated with that reads better, and then have the energy costs come after the
after the incident,
yeah, after the consumption.
That's
consumption
fine,
then cost. And then we'll get the numbers.
Yep.
Give the consumption cost. Okay, so you want to switch that paragraph?
I just want to move it two paragraphs down to the paragraph after in 2012. Yeah, because that's an inserted paragraph, and I just think it flows better. You're not leading with energy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep, sure. Okay.
There was nothing we had to come back to on page 2. I think everything on the page 2 was agreed upon.
Sorry.
On page 3, the second comment there, or the first comment on page 3, up at the top, supporting the indigenous research facility for further development. I thought about it. I'm fine with it. There's nothing tied to it. You know, it's more feel-good language than anything, but I would support, support initiatives that made the end research that would lead to making it more cost-effective, so it wouldn't,
So you're good with,
I'm fine with leaving that in.
Leaving it, okay. So we can get rid of that.
Yeah.
Then we're down to section 3, alternative fuel.
Well, this is something I had left on the table. I don't want to say deal because that's not the right way to put it, but
an agreement
to. To drop alternative fuel from both that definition and the definition of a green vehicle, if in such a case as the state of law, and we keep the green plate of using it.
I
mean,
I still don't know what substantially non-petroleum is.
Okay, I feel like
tell me what it is.
Yeah, I know.
So why are we putting it in here?
What
is a substantially non-petroleum vehicle?
I'm guessing.
Not an oil
derivative.
That's 99.9. So in other words, those are
electrical gas and propane would be the non-petroleum derivatives.
So the county's not going to be involved in any of those vehicles? LP? No?
The county could still purchase LPG and CNG. It would just not qualify as a green vehicle.
In whose world does that not count as a green vehicle? I think the government's website, and if you look at corporations, I think they certainly count as green fleet vehicles in most, or any corporation, or any other government entity.
I don't know about any other government entity.
Yeah, the vast majority of them, I mean, would consider it. It seems like we're just because of that controversial resolution, we're deciding now that we're going to, everybody's going to stand up. Draw a line in the sand. I mean, if responsible businesses and other municipalities and states and things are doing it, why are we leaving it out? I mean, we're not inventing the wheel here. We should be using this other.
You're talking about the deleting of the language in the green vehicle on number 2?
Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about?
Three.
So getting rid of the definition in number 1 and deleting it in number 2.
Yeah, getting rid of the definition in number 1, I think it's because we don't refer to it much throughout the rest of the copy as now written. Getting rid of it in the second one, for me, is because I want to focus on renewable fuel or non-fuel vehicles in terms of green. I, as I've always said, I'm not totally opposed to the concept of using what we're calling alternative fuel vehicles or what the U.S. DOE,
we're
called alternative
fuel.
Rewrite
them. Well,
we are writing the rules.
But we're going by the rules that professionals have had.
Which professionals? I mean,
hasn't the U.S. Department of Energy or the Environment put down clean, what they consider clean vehicles and clean fleets? why would we want to eliminate vehicles that are, would be in there?
Well, because I can give you other evidence that says that that's not exactly the same.
I'd like to see it. I mean, I'm just
curious. You have seen it. You've seen it over time. I mean, we can paper each other with piles this big and bigger. I mean, you've seen documentation as well.
I think it should be in there. It should be that the federal government has listed a class of vehicles they consider as environmentally friendly, and
Yeah,
shouldn't be leaving.
For me, the concern is then, based on the way it was written, which is what Ken and I reached more of a compromise, but the way that the law was written, it did not discern between the two. So you could end up with an entirely CNG fleet and say it's green, and that's not very green. That's
in your opinion.
But
the government says it is.
I haven't even seen what paper you're saying, but that is just calling it clean vehicle. It's not categorized.
Yeah, this is eliminating all of
them. It's not eliminating them from our fleet. It's eliminating them from the definition of green, as we're talking about a small percentage
of
the
purchase. We have to talk about how small a percentage of the purchase later on.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean that you can't purchase CNG or LPG vehicles.
What is the right vehicle for the job?
I can't right now tell you what the right vehicle for the job is. And I can tell you that the LPG vehicles we were talking about, the concept of doing a Tahoe, making an LPG, to me, seems very counterproductive when, frankly, we should just get rid of the Tahoe. You know what I mean?
But that's your opinion.
All this is, it's my opinion backed by science.
We do have four-wheel drives to work in Ulster County.
There are fuel-efficient four-wheel drives. The Tahoe is not one of them.
That's not your opinion.
Your opinion, the facts are the very minor difference in terms of fuel efficiency. We weren't even talking about a giant difference in fuel efficiency before. We were talking about a difference in emissions from the tailpipe, which then takes into account the upstream effects. We're talking about downstream.
Upstream being fracking.
Okay.
But then again, we're also not looking at the upstream effects of electric vehicles, because most of the electric is generated with natural gas.
Hopefully
our cars will run on good wishes and kisses. But until then, I mean...
Yeah.
There is an active public service commission proceeding to help New York to transfer to distributed energy resources. So...
Right now there's a power plant being proposed in Wavianda in Orange County that's going to be run on natural gas. I mean, it's, thanks, Cameron, just opened back up with natural gas.
Yeah. Right? Remember, they want the coal. They want the dirty, it makes no sense.
I have
I've already said what I think about it being a law.
Yep.
I don't think it needs to be a law, but I'm definitely, content. So call it a law, call it a conflict.
I have a question for you. I've always had a problem with it being a law.
I know.
I've been upfront about it.
Yep.
This is coming to deal primarily with our personnel, people that work for us.
What kind of vehicles?
Mm-hmm. All county vehicles. So why do we need a local law? What will the local law do
because
the policy can't
the,
do?
The policy, with this policy... When you have a local law, you have the ability... If the office of county executive, I want to make it very clear, I'm not talking about county executive, if the office of county executive decides to ignore our policy, we really don't have recourse.
And Kathy was pretty clear about that.
If it's a local law, we have legal recourse that we can take as a body to incite the county executive to follow the policy.
But why would the county executive not follow the policy? Just because he, what?
That's not for me to say.
But you're saying that
for the
but I want you to understand, why I have a problem with it.
Maybe the county code just doesn't like the person who's the chairman of the legislature and wants to
ignore them. I have a problem with creating a law that a policy would do exactly the same thing with.
But it wouldn't.
One has teeth, one has no teeth. It's pretty simple.
But in the end, I'm willing to concede the law thing, but in the end, the teeth, as we've seen in other issues, are through the power of the first. So at any point, the legislature could say, if you had a rogue executive or wasn't a thing, you could...
With 16 votes, you could do whatever you want, but without 16 votes, I mean, we just had the will of the body to buy five propane, conversion kits for vehicles, and the will of the majority of the body was not followed because there weren't 16 votes.
Yeah.
So that's my point is that it gives us options.
It actually gives the minority more power than it gives the majority.
Not to mention the fact that policies normally have like a goal. We hope to have 25% by 2025. This, as it sits and the way it was written, has a requirement. This number of vehicles by this date. And things with a set requirement are typically, but they're more often than not local laws rather than policies.
Well,
can I ask you? I mean, is it something? I appreciate that you think should be wrong. As I said, I don't either.
I know.
But if we can get to a place where we through the course of compromise agree with the contents of what's on the page. Is the law thing a deal breaker for you?
Right now it is. I just don't believe that it needs to be a law. I don't. We're talking about people that work for the county. We're not talking about people out on the street. If they violate, they lose their jobs. If they do this, there's a whole host of things you can do. You can fine people. But the fact of the matter is, I don't believe it needs to be a local law.
Right, but the reality is, if Ken feels his resolve and we feel our resolve, we're going to be. I mean, we all can play it out till its natural end.
Mm-hmm.
And one's going to fail, one's going to pass. The other,
right.
The one that passes, is going to get beat up, and nothing's going to happen. And we're not going to have any really.
We haven't had one for 20.
And we're not going to have we have the chance of having a really good.
Mm-hmm.
Of good content, whatever.
So let's work on it and let's see where we go with it.
I really want alternative fuels in there because I think it really belongs in there, but I'm willing to, meet in the middle. That's where I'm coming from.
But for me, that's a bigger compromise. I mean, for me, I say, okay,
Let's keep going. I don't want to where we were, we'll strike alternative fuel and strike alternative fuel vehicles. And the other thing that we wanted to talk about during this was, in your trace you had sustainable alternative fuel. I don't want that in there either, if that's okay. Because I don't think that the way biodiesel is being explained to me right now, I don't think that that's a sustainable alternative fuel. It was in the comments held for further discussion, including possibly defining sustainable alternative fuel. Because a fuel with 5% biofuel and it's still 95% fossil fuels, to me, that's probably worse than talking.
Some kind of legal technical definition of sustainable? Is that open to interpretation? Okay, I'm fine with that then.
Who are public works?
So the next page that we had comments on was page 6, unless anybody had anything before then.
Is it sure take home policy maybe be incorporated in this? Because that would certainly reduce mileage and be part of the green fleet policy. Remember we had the take home policy where they had
we had the Charlie Buford policy. And then it was superseded by an SOP coming from the executive's office, which I pulled, and I feel like it looks a lot of ways it looks very similar to the Charlie Buford policy.
Wait, you mean to tell me that the executive's office isn't following a policy passed by the legislature?
The only reason I'm saying is because when I'm going to work in the morning, I guess different county managers come into work in tiny vehicles that I know are not getting called out at night. They're not getting called out. They're taking cars home every night because it saves them gas on their personal. To me, that should be incorporated in this.
Charging
the take home car. If you don't get called out at night, then you don't take the vehicle home. Nobody takes the vehicle home, and everybody gets 50 cents a mile or the IRS limit, which is what everybody does in the real world. I literally have three or four family vehicles every morning going to work, and I know the guys, and they're managers. None of them get called out at night. They do this twice a year. I mean, you better all pay them 50 cents a mile.
Not to mention the fact that in the chain of command at the highway department, the section supervisor is talking to the section more than what you broke up, or at least they did when we were dealing with
that's a green fleet policy because they're wasting gas coming and going to work. They're wasting vehicle usage. And if we...
It was a union issue.
But the
thing that continues coming up every time we try to take these cars from them, it becomes the union.
I was in court because they're not going to. I'm in a union. They've taken cars away from our guys before that have gone home. Matt used to take a car home at night, and they said one day you're not taking it home.
That's management. That's a different story. Also, not union.
Just because the Charlie Buford policy was near and dear to my heart, and I was really close with Charlie in drafting it, and then, then with John, we changed our form of government and tried to catch up, and I've talked to him about it a little, and that backing up the union thing, and I feel, and I realize it's kind of a rogue feeling, but I feel very much the same way that if you don't need a take-home vehicle based on the guidelines of the SOP, the executive SOP, how can you be allowed to keep it just because you have it from before in defiance of a policy and an SOP? To me, it's like one of those things that the public would say, are you out of your mind?
It's not in the union contract.
Yeah, but we've gone.
Can I just say something? When we put this policy in place, there were some guys and folks coming in here saying, when I got hired 26 years ago, they told me I got a county vehicle. And we let them keep it, not me, but Jeanette was on that committee. They told them when I got hired. Nobody's got a right to tell somebody when they're hired that you can take a county vehicle home with you for your career. I would call them the Association of Counties. They have to have an opinion on it. I'm sure Ulster County is not the first county in New York City.
I think the first thing to do, and this is what I
asked for him, it's not a contract.
The first thing I think we need to do is find out, is run the current SOP against, let's see, where are the vehicles that are violating because of past practice, so you go XYZ, if it's 2 vehicles, if it's 20 vehicles, let's see where we say, that person would not be allowed to take you home per the SOP, the executive SOP, even work for past practice. And let's find out what we're talking
or,
about.
Dave Shealy retired. He took a car home. Did the new person get a vehicle?
No.
Okay, then that's good then. So anybody gets a promotion or goes into a loan, car's gone there. No, no more vehicles from here on out. I'm
sure that happens too.
I'm happy to provide you with this, Steve.
But that's the question. Is how big is the highway crew? You know, how big is the highway crew?
Yeah.
And the sheriff's department, I think we have to talk about that. Every patrol car
should be
the sheriff's department is also exempt from the charges as well.
I mean, if the county
says it's the charges from
the only one I know.
Well, I don't agree with that.
Let's move on.
So Rich's point is the concept of a take-home vehicle policy being part of the law, which I think is,
when people switch jobs or retire, the replacement is still there, unless they can justify the ABCV.
I agree with this in that if there's no need for them to have the car for county business other than to run them back and forth.
I'm not talking about the specific of what Rich is saying in terms of violators of a policy on the letter, whether or not it's union or past practice. I'm talking about the concept of putting the take-home vehicle policy / SOP into the local law. Because now we're already at a kind of a discord, which Ken has pointed out, that we had a county policy that in effect was superseded by an SOP. Ken's saying he has a problem with it being superseded by an SOP. I'm summarizing what we're saying. So it's like, do we want to get into putting the take-home vehicle policy into this policy of local law?
This comes back to the same issue now. If it becomes a local law, now they violated a local law, and it's a legal issue. It's going to be a misdemeanor. Is it going to, ticket? What's it going to be?
It's not that kind of a...
What are we trying to accomplish with the local law?
The local law allows us to go to an administrative law judge and get an order to have the county executive
But I don't even want to talk about the case. What if an employee violates it?
Well, then I imagine, if the employee is...
It'd be theft. If they're supervised, don't bring the car home and get
home. The executive and the folks who are... going to be abiding by this are
hurt the executive. They could say there's a law, there's a law, there's whatever, you gotta Pete.
We're happy to bring a list of all of the take home vehicles, and Kim will be here, we'll review all of the work that they do. And
can I ask you a question? And I don't expect you to maybe know this, but my pet peeve has been for years when we buy new cars and they say, it's buildings and grounds and the car's got 132,000 miles, I always say, how many of those miles are going back and forth from home and how many are actually at work? Nobody knows. They could say, the person lives 26 miles from the from his or her reporting location, and they do take this vehicle back and forth, so it's 52 times 5 days a week. Blah, 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 you know. If we really want to reduce what we're burning in emissions and fuel oil, then we have to me, people that are driving cars home that aren't getting called out a certain amount of times, and if past practice is going to let them keep it till they retire or get promoted, then let's ensure that the next person doesn't get one. Mm-hmm. I don't see anything wrong with that.
Maybe I will direct a big list, and maybe I can have law department provide some of the case law on the topic.
It makes everybody's job easier.
I know exactly what you're talking about, because my first year in the legislature, I made a big stink about it in the administrative, it was the Administrative Services Committee. Jeanette was the chair of it then, and we took all the cars away, and the union came in, pitched a fit, and we blinked and gave them back.
But you just gave them back. You didn't allow it to be tested.
Well, there wasn't the will of the legislature. I was willing to test
it.
You know,
it has been tested.
Yes.
We can show that to you.
Well, then we just maybe we try to negotiate it out.
We can add the take home vehicle to this in the future if we want to.
And you know, it doesn't mean a future executive could give more people cars.
Question is,
to eliminate them from
I agree that we need to have a policy, and maybe we should make it a local law, because apparently policies can be superseded by SOGs. We were on page 6C at the top, which was, can alternative fuels, fuel vehicles adequately replace existing vehicles and accomplish essentially the same task? I was looking at this, should we write that to be, can green vehicles adequately replace? No?
Once
the fleet manager from each department submitted on an annual basis, blah, 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 the analysis will examine, is the vehicle use necessary, is the smallest, most efficient vehicle being carried out?
Yeah, and I think it should say, can a green vehicle
analysis questions that have to be answered.
Yeah, I think it should say, can a green vehicle? That's the language we have. Well, let's say can a green vehicle adequately replace, or can green vehicles adequately replace existing vehicles in our equipment?
Not one can of vehicle particular.
So you're going to change what's going to the green?
Vehicle being carried out the task, and the ability to use alternative fuel vehicles.
Idling. There was a discussion about the state with their idling program,
mm-hmm.
and they only use certain vehicles. Heavy equipment is the only thing that they have an idling policy with.
What is it?
I sent it. I have it. I thought I brought all of it with me, but I didn't. I left it up on my desk. I'll make sure you all get it.
Okay.
But if that's the only law, and that comes from the DEC, and the DEC can enforce it.
But it's only a law for for
state vehicles,
not
but
state law.
It's state vehicles and only heavy equipment, and only depending on the heavy equipment, you know, like diesel trucks that are being run during the winter, you can't just turn them off and on. But I'll send you the what I have. And there was also another part to that, to what they call green lights, which is deals with contractors and how they have to abide by certain rules in order to get a contract. But I'll send everybody a copy of that. I meant to bring them all with me.
You must have made a recommendation to
provide.
Can I ask a quick question? Tim, is there any way to know about that? If somebody's sitting up in Shandaken and the truck's running.
Well, you would if you have GPS. You can tell if the car's running or not.
Not ours.
Not ours.
Okay,
so we can get a little
add-on.
You can get it, but the cost is
It would be prohibitive, probably. I mean, you know, the county executive's office and the Department of Environment about this, you know, along with the fleet manager, to decide that if that's a choice on me, but...
Because I mentioned last month, Harper Eisen trucks now, they will not return off that.
And
our managers know how much long our trucks are idle on. They know, they'll say, hey, you're...
It's a different telemetry, I think, that you can get in the AVLs that probably...
Yeah, it all depends on the company you have, too. And how much it's going to cost.
Yeah, I'm sure prices.
So some of our trucks have the anti.
They show the new ones.
They do.
Yeah, the new kind of truck, but it has the clean diesel. We have the added that you put it.
Yeah, my house diesel. That's the one that DES that uses exhaust fan. God only knows if that's doing the environment.
Tracy.
Mostly good, but I mean, And can you decide that it makes sense to purchase those AVLs so that we can monitor remotely? Great. In the meantime, having a idling policy in place, especially if we broadcast that we have this policy and someone sees the trucks are sitting there idling, you know, it's like we could, we can inform the public to inform our government.
You can have the keys turned off and grab the keys.
To come with us on the administration to come up with a strategy.
Yeah.
Police requirements, police requirements.
In 5 minutes, we'll go for everybody. All the issues that work.
You can't just turn it off because it's very
smart. Yeah, right. But the sheriff's department,
5 minutes.
Does their computers and everything keep running when cars off?
Yes.
Yes.
They have 2 hours. It'll keep running.
Because they don't use that much electricity.
Not talking about the sheriff, but the state police and our local barracks. They'll leave them outside for 4 hours. They're just sitting there, and they're inside.
During times of emergency response, are against.
How much of the extra time is emergency response?
Who decides? Just throw that out there.
Common sense.
Okay, let's move on.
Okay, so we're switching
five. 3 to 5.
3 to 5. Thank you.
Not 3 to 5, we're deleting 3 and inserting 5.
All right, next. Page 7.
Oh, this is going to be the fun one.
Okay.
5% by 2020.
So we decided on this last month.
We discussed it last month. But I'm comfortable with 5% by 2020.
What makes me comfortable is that it says, beginning in 2016, 100% of new vehicles purchased. That's redundant. We'll be green vehicles and green vehicles. We'll be green vehicles that
maybe it should have kept
my... Yeah. It's redundant, but we'll be green vehicles that qualify in another weight class for the purpose of future
services. But that's not achievable.
Yeah.
I don't remember even talking about that.
I was thinking, you know, especially if
you... Do you face?
I remember being raised, man, I think she'd like to see it.
Oh, okay.
And, but it was a discussion point. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think let's so we start from the... Okay. So we have 100% and let's hear Amanda and hear where
we're at.
My thought would be, it actually goes back to whether or not you include alternative fuels in the definition of green.
We don't.
Because that would include, that would expand the number of vehicles that...
We include alternative fuels in it, it would extend the number of vehicles too.
So, but what I'm saying is that if you look at the different, either through ethanol products or biodiesel products, putting a renewable petroleum base, then you could, then you have more flexibility.
Where can your E buy a station? No, there's not. Sorry, I'm sorry. Keep going.
But it's always, that in general, with a vehicle, you can buy a flex fuel vehicle that is standard, kind of a standard equipment. Anything with biodiesel, at least up into the B20, you know, the 20% fraction. Again, you know, that's pretty much standard equipment.
Yeah.
It increases your flexibility to have that kind of, some portion, some fraction of that fuel to be from a renewable source. So that would be my only thought. And,
I understand what you're saying, but I mean, my point of view on not including it is that we're not including other alternative fuels that are not that burn cleaner, and you know, we're not including them, but we were going to include something that's 95 or at the best at B20 at the best is 80% pure fossil fuel. So I don't, you know, if we're going to call it a green vehicle and we're not going to include alternative fuels because they're not green, I don't want to throw money around there on that.
Tracy?
Yeah, the challenge of the 100% of new vehicles being green vehicles, and I'm asking this as a question, is so if we needed a pickup truck by the modified definition of green, I mean, is there a green hybrid or electric to who even makes them?
I just haven't seen them.
The intention in my floating was that it would be the vehicles that are available. In other words, as you phase in new vehicles, not necessarily be forced to retire vehicles, so they're not ready to be retired. But as you're phasing in new vehicles, unless there's a reason not to, it would be a green vehicle.
I think that point should be worded is that that's not what this says. That maybe the issue point, like for example, if you kind of look at, and then we're developing our plans for purposes right now, and you know, if we make clear, we're going to be going for plug-in electric hybrids for this van. But there, like for example, there's a bunch of vans that we have to buy. That kind of thing. And what Amanda and Kim have scoped out is probably the most fuel-efficient van.
The transit.
It's totally the appropriate choice under this green fleet policy. I mean, how do you incorporate
the right size for the right job?
Yeah.
It qualified under everything except for the fact that you can't plug it in.
Yeah, we need to be looking at would a mid-sized pickup truck work versus a full-size? You know, but that's
right.
A different question. So, yeah, so.
I would be comfortable if we took out the beginning of 2016, because another thing that we're not taking into account here that's important to me, and it was important to me in a couple of places in the local law that was written, is that, you know, we're not just playing with a pot of money here that's unlimited. You know, we have taxpayers that we have to be responsible to as well, and if we can't, you know, if the Prius has a $10,000 higher or whatever plug-in we were going to use, Focus, whatever's on state bid, it has a $10,000 higher price point than the non-plug-in or non-hybrid Focus, and there's no chance of making back the investment on that, or if it's, you know, if the length of time, the useful life, is not long enough to sustain a, you know, essentially a repayment to the taxpayer of the investment, you know, the return on investment isn't good enough, then, you know, I don't think that we're doing right by the taxpayer by saying we're only going to buy that kind of vehicle.
That's a good point.
I think it has to be part of the analysis.
Yeah.
But it is interesting to see the city of New York who's been buying hybrids for sedans for all different kinds of vehicles for 15 years. They've looked at kind of the total cost of ownership of the vehicle, so not only the purchase price difference, and then, you know, how much you differentially save in fuel over that time, kind of like the first step. But then they went further to look at, okay, what are the, you know, shop costs?
Yeah.
And then, what's the difference in when we go to auction? Like when we go to get another vehicle, what are the differences there? And they were able to look at that over 6,000 vehicles, and they found that their hybrids that they were buying actually saved them money over the life of the vehicle.
But New York City might. New York City also has a different topography, and they're gonna save a lot more on the gas than we will.
Right, but a robust analysis that really looking at the difference, not just the price, but the gas price, the maintenance. And then the auction.
Right now, honestly, the hybrids aren't going to have as much of a payback because gas prices are so low.
But I think that, you know, through the reporting that's going to flow, you know, through this policy,
which is
how are going to be able to make that judgment? We're dealing with a handful of buckets right now.
Real quick,
come on. I've been very lenient.
Okay.
You
can go
ahead.
What?
Another question? I apologize for jumping in.
I have, the one thing that I do have a question about is maintaining these vehicles. As we begin to switch over this fleet, repairs, how's that going to, do we have people that are trained to do that type of work, or will we have them?
Well, right now we have a mechanic job that's open, so we're looking for someone with hybrid experience. That's what we're doing now.
Okay, but as we progress, I'm assuming we're going to be getting more people on board. Or
all of the work is regular maintenance work, tires, brakes, oil changes. It's not.
I'm talking about the engine work, the motor work. You know, it's not an engine anymore.
Now it's motor. Really good that you don't need 10 mechanics that do it.
I have no idea. I don't know what a motor looks like.
Once we have one person, the hybrid is an engine.
It's on the
roof. And you have a
battery. Certainly, we're talking about a handful of vehicles at the moment.
Yeah. At the moment.
And we have a
substantial
fleet that, you know, we don't buy a lot of vehicles. I mean, we have an old fleet, you know, so, it, you know, we're going to kind of transform that fleet.
Okay. Jim, thanks. The point that I was going to make is that if we have a goal by 2020, and leave off, whatever the goal is, if it's 5%, if it's 7%, I mean, whatever the goal is by 2020, then we're going to have 5 years worth of data to be able to make an educated decision on, okay, do we want to have every vehicle purchased be one of these vehicles? Is that fiscally responsible? Is that responsible, is there something better that comes along that's not in here? I mean, there's a lot of things, and that would give us, like I say, a good set of data points.
Can we, to what Ken was saying earlier, can we find a way, Mana, to delete this, to delete this language from number 3, but reword it in a way to your larger point, rather than requiring that 100% be green vehicles as newly defined without the sustainable alternative fuel, but rather to say that, you know, every effort will be made if it's appropriate to
maybe if
you know what I'm saying, like,
I want to have language that asks the fleet manager or the, you know, executive branch as they're doing their planning. Mm-hmm. That they actually really look at the full life cycle, not from cradle to grave, but to the purchase of that car. So when I had to decide between a hybrid
and a plug-in, they ran the numbers for me. Now, you know, do I trust Toyota? And I actually looked up Consumer Report, and I did some research. And it was like a five-year payback. That's the amount of mileage I put on my car, even with the lower prices, it's getting paid back a lot faster because I happen to drive more than the average person. So it's a question of looking at those vehicles, looking at the use, looking at the payback. If we can have something that, you know, directs that, and we can, if we went to 10%, that's 2% a year.
We don't replace that many. Like
we don't replace
that many. Before we get into how much or how little, I want to address the 5-year payback and the life cycle and all that. And without getting into your finances, because it's none of my business, included in that analysis that you got from Toyota and your own research, do you include government tax credits on green vehicle purchases? Because I don't think that those are available to the county.
Available to me either because it was a used car.
Oh, okay.
It was only a year old, okay. And it only had 8,000 miles. So.
A lot of those analyses, you know, one of the reasons that the payback is as short as it is because of government sponsored.
I would suspect that we would be prepared to any annual reporting to include that kind of data. So if you add it, we're fine if you add that. I don't think that's an issue at all. One concern that I have is, you know, you're ensuring that a minimum of 5% of the fleet to green by 2020. We don't buy cars every year. I mean, if we're in a situation where we don't have a lot of extra funds, we're not going to pierce the property tax cap, whatnot. I mean, we may not, you know, what if, you know, the economy tanks again next year? We don't buy cars for 2 years. We're not going to meet this goal. That's, you know what I mean? So.
Is it 340? Is that fleet?
So since we're not going to finish this tonight, would you allow us to kind of lay out that spreadsheet and kind of just get some, you know, let's look at that and, you know, because we got to get this getting off.
I will do that. I'll drive all the way back tomorrow, Benny, at 4 o'clock if you want to do that.
Yes, I'm open to whatever, but the one thing I want to bring up, especially if we're getting fatigued and we're drawing it to a close.
I've asked Erica to come tonight to talk about the Green State Review Committee.
I feel like that is...
Do you want to go to the next thing? Nitrogen tires was next, but we could hold that off until the next meeting if everybody wants to. Nitrogen
tires
doesn't decay as quickly as air pressure in tires.
I think that's my comment on the nitrogen tires. I mean, my concern with it was we're just citing one possible example. I felt like it's better to just keep it open in terms of keep apprised of new technology. Just keep apprised of new technology instead of cut that nitrogen tires. Which is included, but I just think the language of a law that's meant to live, you know, in
10 years, and then she's
not. I mean, we do it such as if it's not, it's not the only thing.
Let's
not
do it,
but whatever.
Let's do it.
It's
fine. So people can go.
All right. Okay. So the Green Fleet Review Committee that we talked about. You know, just to start with, I'm willing to take out, yeah, in lieu of the reporting requirement we talked about last time, I'm willing to take out the non-voting members of the Green Fleet Review Committee to make it even more purely an executive function. And if having the sheriff on there is an opposition factor as well, I'd be willing to make him a non-voting member or take him on. Although I think that with the number of vehicles he has, it might be important to have him on the committee.
Yeah.
I did have asked the county attorney to submit him, right? Because I asked the county attorney to review it. Anyone that suspects she has a lot of issues, charter concerns, separation of power concerns. So what I would recommend...
Are there some, though? Because the reason that I asked Erica to come tonight was because I was told he was going to come.
I'm sorry, he could not make it until 3 hours. But I'd be happy to speak to you in the morning and ask her to call Erica and set up an appropriate time to meet and review it. I know she's done a first pass. She's been dealing with that election law a lot.
Yeah.
So if I could... Maybe ask that I would commit to have the reach out to Erica at the appropriate time to go over it and
not for nothing. Our attorneys can make it here at our committee meeting. I don't understand why the county attorney wouldn't be able to make herself available for one committee meeting. We don't have to bring election.
I apologize. I don't control the county attorney.
I understand.
My point is, can you do it, right? Call you tomorrow.
Why do whatever my attorney tells me to do. What's it?
I would ask the chairman of the committee to write a letter to the county executive asking him to have the county attorney at our next meeting. This is a meeting of the legislature, a meeting of this committee to discuss the local law. I think that it shouldn't be a meeting with me and Erica and Tracy and B.
You don't have to worry about it. I'll ask you to be at the
meeting. And can we also ask maybe in advance of that, I think it would be good for B to talk to Erica in advance of that. Or if there's anything that could be put into writing or whatever so that we, the members, don't come blind.
I'm fine with that, but I don't want the meeting for the attorneys to occur somewhere else and then a memo to come and then a letter
that's
back.
The thing. I'd like to have Erica's position, not in formal writing, but in something that I can review before, and B's position is something that I can actually, so that when we arrive and we're talking about this, the rest of us are informed.
So
it doesn't have to be an official legal. Listen to the attorney's opinions
and then make a decision.
So
I'm not going to argue. All I can say is I can represent to the members of the committee that the county attorney has some serious observations about it.
On top of the county attorney, though, since we're here right now, if people are too tired to discuss it now, we can, again, I just want to put it out there. I also like Kim and Amanda, Kim and Amanda to look at this section, not in relation to the charter, but in relation to policy as it operates now.
Yeah.
So that, because Ken and I had discussed, when there were parts where we changed some of them, I just want to make sure, again, not a charter discussion, not a legal discussion, but is it time to start in reality?
I appreciate you trying to, recognize it. We're trying to do a good job.
Yeah.
It's not about it.
No one's going to get this because they're not important. And then they can say it's not their job to, and then pretend there's no money. But we might be able to notwithstanding legal differences, we might be able to get to a place where we can agree with the internal. We can already start talking and taking off a pretty
if I could just kind of summarize kind of what's going on. So we're going to produce a list of the take-home cars and where they are. We'll have that for the next meeting.
Can you also have a copy of the SOP for the take-home vehicles?
I think if we match it up to the policy there, it's extremely similar. We tightened it up a little bit.
Can you maybe, if it's possible,
do the miles from the recording location to the employee's home that has a
couple? Yeah, we've had that already.
We have it again. Again, I think the sheriff's one.
Okay.
I know it's going to come down to those union issues.
No, but we can write in the future.
Somebody retires, the next person gets their job, we'll bring that to the next meeting. I'll also have the county attorney reach out to Erica, and we'll just do a quick compare on kind of what we mashed up. I know Amanda was whispering that, she probably thought she had something to add, so we'll look at it,
And the finances and fuel, that's increased just for that little blur in the beginning.
So just, the real cost, I
guess the same as we did the other in the opening, like 2000.
I think that we're pretty close to having
2012 is when we did the baseline for Green
Okay. All right, so where are we at?
And can I just, it seems like a one-off, but it's not, because I feel like I hear Rich about the pet peeve on the take home, because that goes back a long way. And because Ken Young was talking about the difference, maybe can we also ask B to explain to us the whole interconnect between the policy and the SOP, and you know, because Ken is questioning that, and so I feel like we ought to have the discussion.
No problem. And also, I'll see to prepare to talk about some of the grievances and the deferred actions as it relates to past practice with take-home cars with certain bargaining units, and give you a sense of kind of the work.
Can I ask one more question about take-home? The sheriff, because this is something I've brought up a lot over the years, but just have never knuckled down about. But in my opinion, on the sheriff's take-home vehicles is very well known. One of the arguments for in favor of having take-home patrol vehicles is their visibility in the community. That's what I hear repeatedly from the sheriff and from past sheriffs. So that got me thinking, and I'll talk to the sheriff about this too, but I want to know if you have the information, that, okay, so where do all these vehicles go home to? Are they evenly distributed around the county? Does my community have visibility, or are they all going to... Are 20 of them in one community, and 5 in another, and 2 in another?
And green, 8 in Columbia.
I'm not kidding. I'm serious. It's like, if we're going to talk about that as a real benefit, I would like to analyze the real benefit as it pertains to the county as a whole and how it's distributed across the county as a whole.
But how could you do that without requiring somebody to live somewhere? I'm saying you cannot argue that there's a benefit,
and you certainly can't argue that there's a fair benefit if they're not evenly distributed. I don't want to require anyone to distribute them based on crime rate.
I mean, there's more crime in the city of Kingston than Gardner.
But is that what the county is spending money on? Is proportionally on Kingston over Gardner? Where are they going?
Excuse me, I got a question for everybody. The 16th at 5 o'clock?
April.
Hang on, what day
is it? It's a Thursday. Is there anything else that night?
No,
it's
one.
What? Oh, we can't do that. for the Palestine Film Chinese. He made six.
Mike's not inviting us. I'm deciding to be anti-business act of 2015.
So you said it's that
you want to be there. No.
Yeah. Can you get here by 5? I don't know how long it's going to take. I mean, it's like a bunch of people are coming. No. Six?
Alright. You do 6?
Yeah, I can do 6 if I'm free.
Okay. Can you make sure that you just let me know ahead of time about the availability, because I don't want to be here at the time of the day.
Thank
you.
Is that a tip? I can do it. We're not finishing this one. No more.
All right. That's correct. All right. Let's go over my objection. What seems like everybody wants to wrap this up.
Maybe people are getting on the bench.
We can pick it up on the 16th.
I have a piece of new business. If we can, is this grant up for me? No?
Go ahead.
It's about solid waste management business commission. We have, I think, I heard there were 2 people who came forward for the at-large position. Is that accurate?
One physically came forward.
Okay.
One was there. And then Amanda, you had someone else?
I did, but she hasn't submitted her resume, and as far as I'm concerned, that it's a good
selection. And let me see the name. I can do an update on that. I did follow up with Roger Chipman's recommendation, and unfortunately, she is not going to be able to take that. She just has so many other things involved.
So. Okay. So I just wanted the committee to talk about, you know, what the timetable is going to be to put that person on the committee. That's all.
Well, this is new information. It's unfortunate because the committee, I think, would support the gentleman who came forward who truly John C. Public, exactly what we were looking for. Not as man described in the young John C. Public, which is nice.
At this time, there's a proposed special meeting on the 27th of April.
But isn't that after session?
Yeah.
It's not after resolution deadline for...
Right, but it would be great to get... I mean, it would be great to get him into this.
Well, then it would be late for...
We can do it in the whole, but I don't know.
Yeah,
all right.
Then, it'll be next month. But I would think if that doesn't meet, then we should... Given that, we should probably move on to meeting, even not voting.
He's currently getting... He's been getting all your... He's been taking different things.
Really?
I have... I have 2 resolutions here, and I don't see any of them really.
There's not. Those are these 2 resolutions. I think we should take an action.
We're not doing anything with them.
They're never moved.
There was a move.
Only on one
of them.
That's right, Gary did it.
I wish you all my motion there with the 7.
And maybe, Chris said to the committee, could you circulate the executive's SOP on county use of take-home vehicles and Charlie Busick policy, which you can pull up online? And I don't know if you're being upset. I also found that the comptroller's trying to use the take-home vehicles of course. I don't know if anyone can read that.
Make sure the
court makes that. I can, in one sentence, do the climate mark and get it out of the way. We looked at different, but the people that needed to be there were about 50 people that attended the municipal street lighting forum. Mary was there, and the right people were in the room, the people that are actively working on this and needed that information. The panel was good, the discussion was excellent. work good work generates more work, so now people do want to follow up. I think our only responsibility is to follow up with people in Ulster County and let the people from Westchester and the people from Sullivan meet on their own. There will be, the PowerPoints will be posted and the information will be circulated, and I do have an extra packet. But it was a good event, sponsored by several different organizations, but VHB did a lot of the work and the Climate Smart Committee. So that'll be probably an ongoing aspect of Climate Smart. And then we'll be talking about the Siemens Energy audit in the next meeting, because we ran out of time in public works.
Is that it?
Sure.
Am I the only one that's solid waste commission that you were referring to earlier, it sparked my event, and I do need to talk to Hector and Carl about it, but we're starting our trips to the different facilities to take in information, and I suggested there's two coming, the first two coming up are Night of Herkimer, the second one coming up is a week from next Friday, the 24th, and the 22nd is Rockland and Duchess. But the reason I'm bringing it up is I don't right now have the authority to send the invitation to Peter and Ken, but without the authority, I'm extending the invitation because I think if you can find the time, particularly for Oneida Herkimer, especially being on this committee, it would be great to come. I'm leaving Mary out because Mary saw it. And Leon said he's not going to go to allow for more room. And Hector was concerned about the number of people, but on our last trip, we had even more than our partners signed up. Oneida Herkimer. And it's really, I think if every legislator could come, we'd be having a different conversation right off the bat. But
if every resident of Ulster County could come, we'd be having a different conversation.
But still, since you're members of this committee, if you can, look at your calendar.
24th.
The 24th is a long day. It's a 7:30 leave in the morning. We'll probably get back at 4:30. So, it's a day off of work. But,
didn't tell me. Tracy, since I can't tell, I think... Yeah, that's one person in the trip who might want to have a second opportunity.
Yeah.
So people can't go on.
But anyway, look at your calendars and consider, because I cannot recommend it enough, and it's really, it's very, very good.
Second. Richie is first and
yeah,